Reflection 5. Digital ecosystems. We've seen that the same protocol functions in ecosystems and ancient social systems can be seen in today's centralized resource coordination networks, the main difference being that much of humanity has lost its ability to pool common resources and is forced to depend on extractive centralized pools and access tokens, or money. Decentralized technologies have and are continuing to rebel against this. The digital dimension of cross-pollination and value exchange is at the forefront of a rebellion from centralized control. In this reflection, we will dive into these digital realms and discuss the hopes and strategies that grassroots economics offers us for ending the current massive centralization peacefully. Let's stop for a moment to define the knowledge commons. This term refers to an intangible commons, a network of pools of curated valuable information, commitments, stories, and science. Today, it also refers to software that people can access, learn from, and add to. This commons is stored in our memory, our written memory extensions, and more often, in digital devices. Cultivating the knowledge commons, a space of overlapping pools of information, and preventing centralization and corruption is incredibly important and challenging. As soon as we have a dependency on centralized digital systems, we can start to lose our freedom to create and access these commons without going through some controlled and often extractive access point, also known as bottlenecks or choke points. In the digital realm, choke points emerge in ways that mirror the same centralized control found in colonial methods. Proprietary platforms, dominated by a few corporations, function like heavily guarded ports where only certain ships may dock. Search engine algorithms control what appears on our screens, relegating some content to obscurity. Government censorship, meanwhile, can ban or filter entire websites, reminiscent of colonial powers restricting speech and movement. Licensing requirements impose costly barriers to entry, including those who cannot afford to comply, much like historical edicts that granted only certain traders the right to do business. Mandates on data localization, content moderation, and platform liability can all serve as modern enclosures, shaping information channels in ways that favor larger powers and limit local or independent voices. Collectively, these tactics reinforce dependency on a small number of digital gatekeepers and echo the same patterns of control and resource extraction that have long underpinned centralized power. While many of these practices could be considered normal and not harmful at small scale, we can already see a situation emerging in which the majority of the world's information and communication systems are stored with restricted access in a few big companies' databases. Even the digital hardware of phones and computers comes from factories owned by a few big companies. We can also see these companies, combined together through horizontal shareholding, lobbying governments to allow and favor their monopolies. While at present we are extremely dependent on centralized digital technologies, there is an opportunity to co-opt or hack the system by expressing pooling protocol functions through the development of open source systems that empower communities to establish and manage their own pools with their own sovereign hardware and software. This software and hardware ecosystem can provide the digital infrastructure and tools to give access to, operationalize, and renormalize the key instruments for pooling commitments. Ledgers, or databases that act as a memory and accounting systems, form a core element of this software ecosystem. Distributed ledger technology, or DLT, is like a shared ledger or digital notebook distributed across many computers called nodes, where everyone holds a copy. At Grassroots Economics, we currently use and develop DLTs that allow for the freedom to develop and connect community devices together to form sovereign distributed ledger systems. These decentralized technologies play a crucial role in mimicking and enhancing traditional memory systems of human brains in communities. Quote, "Blockchain is not about removing trust, it's about distributing trust." Vitalik Buterin. Here are several ways in which Grassroots Economics has utilized blockchain and, more generally, decentralized ledgers. A decentralized ledger can ensure that all interactions are recorded transparently and immutably. This transparency builds trust among community members as they can verify historic flows of resources. In traditional systems like Mueria, trust is built through face-to-face interactions and communal oversight. A decentralized ledger replicates this by providing a transparent record of all commitments and exchanges. This means that anyone can see the agreements in pools as well as commitments. The nature of decentralized ledgers secures authentication, transactions, and prevents many kinds of fraud. Each transaction is validated by a network of nodes, ensuring that only legitimate interactions are recorded. This security is essential for maintaining the integrity of the network of resource pools and protecting against malicious activities, much like the social norms and enforcement mechanisms in traditional systems. In practice, we've enabled community members to easily validate who they are and which commitments and pools they steward via a mobile phone and a secret PIN. Note that not all stewardship protocols and social norms need to be or should be digitized, as some are deeply rooted in cultural contexts and thrive best within face-to-face or analog environments. Smart contracts are agreements with terms directly written into code, read by the network, which can automatically enforce the protocols of pooling commitments without intermediaries. This automation reduces the administrative burden and allows the system to scale to more dispersed networks. This is essentially giving people the ability to bake rules like accountability into their agreements. In this environment, the contract is a bit like a living organism with programmed code forming its DNA or instructions. Given easy-to-use open-source interfaces, anyone can write and interact with contracts, simply expressing what their commitments are and pooling those together for common access. Decentralized ledgers can integrate various forms of digital resources and traditional practices, allowing different communities to connect their pools together. For example, such digital networks of pools can facilitate exchanges between different types of commitments, certifications, and other digital tokens like stablecoins, vouchers representing national currency, creating a broad and diverse network of resource coordination. This interoperability is akin to the ecological networks of mycorrhizal fungi, which connect multiple plant species to share resources efficiently. In practice, Grassroots Economics has enabled people to pool all kinds of digital assets, which means they can also link the commitments in the pool to national currencies. Distributed ledgers help the system to be resilient to failures and adaptable to changes. Unlike centralized ledgers, in which a single point of failure can disrupt the entire network, a distributed ledger ensures continuity and robustness, since any one computer can shut down without the system collapsing. This resilience mirrors the adaptive strategies found in ecological systems, where diversity and decentralization enhance stability and sustainability. In practice, Grassroots Economics is responsible for a node of the CELO blockchain, meaning that we can continue the system without the rest of the CELO blockchain, while the rest of the network can also continue without Grassroots Economics. Overall, decentralized ledgers have provided us with what can be called an agreement space or consensus layer, which includes a memory system, authentication, and verifiable execution of agreements. Building on this, implementing the four functions inherent to pooling commitments has been fairly straightforward as a collection of smart contracts that can be published and interacted with by their creators. Let's get more into how the protocols for pooling have been expressed in this digital environment. The curation process begins by turning each commitment into a unique digital record. This digitization creates a clear and unchangeable way to track and verify each commitment. The commitment is formalized as a smart contract, a computer program stored on a shared digital system, a decentralized ledger. This smart contract tracks who holds portions of the commitment, and it can manage features like expiration dates automatically. The pool of commitments is also managed digitally, using software that enforces the agreed-upon rules for adding commitments, such as who is eligible to add or pull out of the commitments and what approvals are needed. Valuation in a digital pool of commitments is done through a price index that can enable pool stewards to determine the relative value of different commitments. External data sources can provide real-time price information for certain commitments like stablecoins that track national currency value, helping to establish a reference point for valuing related commitments within that pool. Smart contracts can also be designed to adjust the relative value of commitments based on many parameters like seasonality, supply, and demand within the pool. Limitation or capacity management is done via a real-time view of the total commitments within the pool. This allows for continuous monitoring of the pool's capacity and helps prevent overcommitment or depletion of specific resources. Limits on reciprocal drawing rights can be based on previous performance history, current capacity, and demand within the community. This helps to ensure a balance between the needs of the community and the sustainability of the pool. The last function of exchange is also enabled by the contractual design, eliminating the need for intermediaries and reducing transaction costs. Smart contracts can facilitate swaps, where two parties exchange commitments simultaneously, ensuring a secure interaction. Further, pool stewards can automate the collection of contributions, helping to ensure investment transparency and accountability in the management of the pool. This shared distributed ledger system ensures transparency and security by allowing all participants to verify and match their copies, making it nearly impossible to fake or lose information. Commitments or promises to deliver goods and services, for example, "I'll fix your car" or "I'll trade eggs for milk," are recorded in this digital notebook for everyone to see and trust. A digital agreement space ensures that all participants agree before new commitments are added, maintaining the integrity of the shared record. In essence, a distributed ledger system is a transparent and secure way to manage commitments and exchanges within a group. Navigating vast networks. We can envision an economy in which individuals, businesses, and groups can issue commitments and have them accepted within pools of commitments, giving them credit that they can spend widely, because a large network of overlapping trusted pools helps to convert an individual's promise into something backed by a much wider community. The more we want to connect across and traverse these larger systems, the more help we will need to navigate a vast network of pools. The challenge is akin to organizing a vast, dynamic trade fair, where participants have specific, want and offer lists. Here, the objective is to enable as many satisfactory exchanges across the network as possible, while ensuring that values and principles are cared for. AI and various algorithms in this scenario could function as advanced matchmakers, pairing offers with wants and utilizing the network of pools to fulfill these desires. They can employ iterative methods to continuously refine the trade matches, aiming to optimize the number of successful trades while prioritizing local transactions and caring for community and environment. For such assistance and optimizations to happen without coercion and without extraction through centralization, the underlying AI or algorithms must be decentralized, adaptable, and capable of responding to the fluid nature of pool liquidity and valuation. Transparency and trustworthiness of such service providers is paramount, ensuring that every participant can rely on the fairness and security of the system. Grassroots economic principles and decentralized technology converge in these advanced applications to create more efficient and inclusive systems. Through these approaches, large-scale economies can maintain balance and maximize trade opportunities and ecosystem and community health within a vast, globally interconnected network of local pools, referred to as cosmo-localism. While digital decentralized technologies are hacking into the global financial system and enabling us to create our own pathways for connection while bypassing centralized and extractive structures, they too can become centralized and extractive, especially when the people using them are not actively engaged with their design, evolution, and maintenance. Moving such software and hardware into the hands of the users is the realm often called tech sovereignty, and this should be a core topic in any discussion of grassroots economics. While developing open-source software is important, when you are the only one developing, maintaining, and running that software, you become a systemic risk to the system. So, while grassroots economics is a steward of Sarafu.network, it's important that this single network is only one of many nodes across the planet. This is why we must continue to train trainers to work on, run, and develop their own technologies and maintain backup options using analog systems and paper ledgers. While blockchain and smartphone apps can supercharge our ability to record, pool, and exchange commitments, not everyone can, nor needs to, run their own infrastructure. Simple paper-based ledgers and communal record keeping can work just as effectively for smaller pools, as you will see in the case study in part 2. The key is clarity and trust, not technological complexity. Communities can choose the tools that suit them best without fearing that low tech is somehow inferior. In fact, many groups often find that analog approaches feel more tangible, approachable, and secure. The opportunity in use cases. Given the warnings above on the dependency on technologies, it's important to recognize that most of us are extremely dependent on existing digital technologies, like Visa cards or mobile money, and the global monetary system. The following sections outline several examples of ways in which people have applied the principles of grassroots economics to co-opt today's digital financial systems in order to provide a peaceful transition back into symbiosis. Vending machines. I will begin with a common situation today in which someone offers a service and simply wants national currency in return. This is akin to a vending machine, except that instead of putting money in and taking something out, the owner puts something in the machine and asks for money in return. It may seem counterintuitive or mundane, but if we are to transition from a centralized national currency economic system into a more polycentric mutual service system, we will have to tackle the current need for, or addiction to, money. In this example, Joan runs a small school and wants to sell subscriptions for her teaching services. Joan creates a voucher worth $1 of tuition fees and also publishes a pool and seeds it as follows. She places 4 of her vouchers in the pool, inviting anyone to exchange each of them for $1. In other words, anyone can place $4 in the pool and pull out her vouchers at a 1-for-1 value. Once this is done, the pool would then contain $4 and 0 vouchers. Note that the total value of the pool remains constant, which is, of course, $4 of value. This is akin to a simple vending machine, but instead of a physical product, there is a commitment or voucher, making the machine a sort of production financing facilitator. Joan places what she deems as $4 worth of her resources, i.e. teaching services or tuition vouchers, in the pool and allows anyone to exchange it with $4, effectively giving her money up front. While this example is for teaching services or school tuition, a myriad of other types of commitments could follow the same model, such as a subscription for local vegetables or community-supported agriculture, a gym membership subscription, bus tickets, gift cards, phone credit, and so on. This is comparable to a simple business contract, where a consultant sells a commitment to provide services to a client who can buy or exchange them with US dollars and redeem them over time for services, subject to terms and conditions specified in the commitment's formalization. What makes this example different from someone going to school and paying for the next semester's tuition is that the vending machine is digital and can be accessed online, and anyone holding US dollars could swap them for tuition vouchers and vice versa. If they have vouchers they are not using, they could swap their remaining vouchers for US dollars if there are some still in the pool, or give them to someone else. Since this pool exists on a decentralized ledger, anyone with these 2 commitments can swap US dollars and teaching vouchers. This pool then begins to act as a general conduit or market connecting US dollars and teaching vouchers, and can be used by a network of other pools that contain US dollars or teaching vouchers. Note that one could also specify exactly who can hold their vouchers and their transferability via an access list. It is also important to note that whenever anyone buys a voucher in advance, they are in effect providing a form of production financing. The voucher issuer who is selling their voucher is receiving some value, money or in kind, up front, and is obligated to pay back the loan in product, goods or services. In other words, they must redeem the voucher as specified by the terms of the voucher. Collateralized resources. The above case might seem risky. What if Joan doesn't accept back the vouchers, or her teaching is not the quality promised? While this can be handled under contract law and a state or community legal system, those processes are cumbersome and expensive. Seeing that her clients want some form of collateral, Joan could add more resources to her pool as follows. Let's assume that Joan holds some other vouchers, which are subscriptions to teaching services at other local schools in the area. Joan seeds 2 of each into the pool along with the existing 4 of her own vouchers. So if, for some reason, the buyer does not want Joan's teaching services or they're unavailable, they could swap their Joan tokens for other teaching vouchers, which act as a form of collateral and increased utility. This might be useful when moving to a new area and changing schools. Note that the pool transaction fees, denominated in the commitments themselves, could constitute an insurance fund that is available to people who hold defunct vouchers from the pool. So while having multiple resources in the pool does give more options to holders, ultimately, if the pool is managed by a larger group of people, this helps to mitigate the risk of defaults or vouchers not being redeemed. Cooperative ownership. One disadvantage of the vending machine model is that it relies solely on people curating their own vouchers in pools. Now let's imagine a case where the pool creator has none of their own commitments in the pool and simply wants to create a pool and seed it with various commitments and digital resources that they hold, while charging fees on exchanging them. This would be akin to creating an exchange out of a portfolio of resources, which allows anyone holding those specific, allowed resources to exchange them for other resources in that pool. The creator of such a pool could, for example, be a family foundation wanting to encourage collaborations between organizations it has invested in. Joan could share pool stewardship rights with other schools, represented by Jane and Bob, who would be able to vote on the parameters of the pool. The simplest version of this might be a multi-signature wallet, where the signatories must all sign to make any changes, or 2 out of 3 signatories might be able to make changes. This would act as a safeguard in case someone loses their signing key. Note that it will always be possible for forms of centralization to arise from these kinds of networks, which is why networks of smaller pools and clear commitments are so crucial in preventing extractive centralization. If there were exchange fees on using the pool, these could also be divided among all 3 owners. Indeed, fees could be split among anyone who seeded resources in the pool, as well as an insurance fund in case of default of any vouchers in the pool, and to help with the maintenance and balancing of the pool. One of the best ways to develop an insurance fund that I have seen is to have a tax on usage of the pools as well as a hoarding tax. This is sometimes called demurrage or a Giselle tax. The commitments, whether held by an individual or in a pool, can have an expiry date. These pool fees and expired commitments or vouchers can be utilized by a community fund that supports emergencies and defaults. Mutual service exchanges. Since the concept of pooling at grassroots economics formed around learning from mutual service practices, i.e. roller traditions such as Mueria, it's important to come back to these and consider them in the digital context. One person could call upon the commitments of the community and return give their own over time. Based on the formalization of pooling protocols, each person would express their commitment to services, possibly as a voucher, and place these in the pool. A committee, made up of village elders or group leaders, acting as stewards, could manage permitted resources, limits, and relative values. Unlike in the previous examples, labor is not necessarily swappable with US dollars, since rotating labor associations don't generally use money. However, there might be instances where hired labor or support from neighboring groups is mixed with roller commitments. Reflection 2 outlined the exchange of commitments across 3 families in this same digital fashion as a record keeper. The system satisfies the traditional mutual service example while also giving several opportunities for the group to transparently choose to create overlapping pools like those of a neighboring village. Each person can have commitments in several overlapping pools, acting as a bridge between them. This network of pools connected by shared commitments can act as a polycentric economic system. Pooled Islamic endowments. Resource coordination practices predate formal religions, arising from our earliest instincts for survival and cooperation. It's no accident that faith communities worldwide find that these practices align beautifully with core values of stewardship and compassion. This guide is meant for all traditions and none, reminding us that collaboration is part of our universal human heritage. Dr. Abdul Hakim Maina has been applying his studies of Islamic finance using digital pools of commitments on Safaru.network to build a community of resilient community waqfs in Kenya. Abdul Hakim explained to me that an Islamic endowment, a waqf, can be a seed of money or any valuable resources that are intended to help a community and are maintained over time. I visited him, curious to learn more. After giving us tea and the proper attire to attend prayers at his mosque, he explained his system as follows. An endowment of national currency in the form of a stable coin resource, a digital commitment for US dollars, is seeded or endowed in the pool by Abdul Hakim, who then extends access to the endowments to trusted shopkeepers in the area via zero interest loans. The shopkeepers can exchange their own commitments to their store goods as digital vouchers they have created to pull out endowed funds from the pool. There is also an agreement that shopkeepers will exchange back funds for their commitments over time. Abdul Hakim explained that he believes in patient capital, believing that the borrower can exceed their time limit without harassment, while also encouraging repayment within the time limit by awarding them a higher credit limit in the pool and a boost to their reputation. These shopkeepers, who are the main community lenders in Kenya, then use the funds to stock their shops and give out the same kind of loans to their clients. That's cascading or overlapping pools. This means people have resources when they need them, and solves a serious problem in cash-starved communities. A waqf, or seed endowment, is intended as a reciprocal instrument that helps the community. In combination with zero-interest lending, the waqf can be seen as an Islamic formalization of ancient reciprocal practices like the Mwariya tradition of the Mijikenda. Simply put, a community can use the endowment for their collective good and must replenish what they use to maintain it over time, much as someone receiving communal support in a Mwariya must return that support to others over time. Islamic finance, endowments, and zero-interest loans offer additional examples of ways to utilize scarce, but still needed, national currencies in a way that is more sustainable while also building the resilience of rural, urban, and refugee communities. This resilience-building aspect is potentially the most impactful aspect of the common pool structure, since once a community has created a waqf with an endowment and is using it for zero-interest lending, they also have the ability to exchange directly among themselves, bypassing the need for national currency. For example, if Katana's shop has credit in the pool and Amina's shop has debt in the same pool, Katana can use his credits to swap his commitments for Amina's in the pool and then use them to purchase goods with Amina, completely bypassing the need for national currency. In other words, Amina can pay back her debt, removing her vouchers in the pool, simply by accepting her vouchers as payment from Katana. Katana, with his vouchers now in the pool, has replaced Amina's debt. In this way, the total value of the pool doesn't diminish, since something must come in as something goes out, and continues to help the community. This creates a dynamic equilibrium in which the tension between credit and debts enables those community members with credit in the pool to clear each other's debts. That's obligation clearing or offsetting. With an endowment, we are creating a clear expectation that the total value of the pool must be maintained over time while also supporting a community of service providers, instead of treating seeded funds in a pool as a gift or donation. This expectation sends a clear signal towards sustainability that is simply not there in many charitable models. Overall, new technologies like shared digital records, distributed ledgers, and agreement systems give us modern tools to work together in ways that build on ancient traditions of cooperation. These tools make it easier to see clearly what everyone has agreed to, stay accountable, ensure people follow through on their promises, and work together seamlessly, even across different systems. They're like bridges connecting the wisdom of how we've always lived and worked together with exciting possibilities for the future. These technologies are not the final answer, but an important step forward in creating systems that support thriving, fair, and connected communities. Shared reflections. Come up with some more examples of how digital systems offer an opportunity for people to connect to national currency and each other in a way that allows for resilience without national currency. What are the dangers and pitfalls of dependency on digital systems, and how can they be overcome? How can the same protocols be used and connected without digital systems?